Blog Talk Radio.
Alafia, welcome to the Care to Read Room. You've got your Omi Inka 7 live coming to you on a Friday. That's right, ladies and gentlemen, we're back at you this evening. I like to say Habari Gani to my new friends, and I like to say what's up to those old friends. Welcome, welcome. This is an all-new featured remix show, and we're coming at you with the bucket, Naked Truth. I hope you're ready for it, ladies and gentlemen, as we broadcast and do an overview of what we've done in the past. We just recently did arranged marriages, and if you did not hear the show, please go back out and view it on demand. And we're talking about today our current situation in the black neighborhoods. That's right. This is an African-American Senate room, so we're talking about how we're faring today as black couples. What's going on in our present situation? As you know, our country has shut down. So that means that we are a little bit more spastic and spatial and just doggone right out the box because we're upset about jobs leaving the community and about the government taking away positions that will never come back. So we are a little spastic. And our relationships will reflect that. It's almost like the earth wobbling and we experiencing the offset of the earth wobbling because we're unstable. Relationships are unstable in the black community. Homes are having problems financially. And I would care to say that those new marriages have put their things on hold because of financial deficits. Now, if we look into our situation, we have to know that we've gone through the worst time of our lives during the Depression. When people were jumping out of windows who had no money, black folks was going on as if it was the same old usual day of scrubbing floors for the man and going downtown on buses and sitting in the back of buses. We never budged or blinked an eye. We kept right on with the beat of the drummer. And we can do that today, ladies and gentlemen. Even though our world may appear to be turned upside down, we can continue to love each other until it hurts and get behind one another and support one another in our relationship. Even though people think this is a time to divorce, stay together. Let's stay together. As Al Green would say, let's stay together. Loving you whether the times are good or bad, happy or sad. Let's stay together. It's very important. If we can make it through this, we can get over the grain house. So I want to welcome you today for successfully making it through a hump day on Thursday and making it through Friday. Because if you can make it through another day, you can make it through another month. And you can make it. I don't care if you don't have shoes to wear. I don't care if you don't have food. I saw a man who didn't have feet. So let's think about the blessings we do have, and let's count them as joy. Count it all joy, because in the end it says we win. And we're up on those 430 years. We're near the end. We're going to rule again. So get in position so you can rule. So stay tuned, ladies and gentlemen. We have a treat for you this evening as we talk about unions and togetherness. I have a guest here this evening. We have Aishi Bidiako back with us, our male counterpart, so you can hear from the perspective of the woman and the male and duality. I'm going to go out and say hello to Mr. Aishi, and we'll be back at you. And the next voice you will hear is from your loving Omi, but I want you to put those seatbelts on because we're getting ready to go on a roller coaster ride, and I want you to be ready. Because I'm taking somebody somewhere today. So hold tight. Hold on, ladies and gentlemen. Let me say hello to Mr. Aishi. And we are just so grateful for Aishi joining us today. He's always been a blessing. Mr. Aishi, welcome to the Care to Read Room. How are you today?
Well, thank you, Empress. I'm doing wonderful. And how about yourself?
I'm just doing great. And I'm blessed. And I'm more than highly favored today. I hope you are.
Oh, yes, indeed. Yes, indeed. Things are just wonderful.
Okay, I'm going to ask you to put your seatbelts on because it's a very dangerous place here today. We are going on a roller coaster ride. We're taking some people where they have not been accustomed to going. So hold tight as we take our station identification. We'll meet you back in the air. How about that?
All righty.
All right, hold tight. Hold tight. Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, and thank you so very much for joining us this evening. We are in our all-new feature show of Reordering the Marriage Style. We're going to take a few moments to go over and to praise our ancestors, acknowledge them, and commune with them. So if you'll join us over in the Talking Cure Room, I certainly appreciate it. And Ms. Aishi, if you would do us the honor of giving us a prayer, I certainly would appreciate it. As I offer up a prayer to our ancestors, I offer up a prayer to Oladulamare, and I acknowledge Oladulamare and ask him if he would be present here today as he reunite the relationships together, as we come together under the umbrella of unions and togetherness. I ask that Akamare would open up every opportunity for us to gather here to get today, knowing that no matter what happens in the plane called Earth, that we know Mother Nature is still in the business of solidifying things. We're talking to the God that's hidden, the unknown God, the God who has no known mother, no known father, no known next of kin, a God who was real, who created himself out of himself and became the womb. We're asking that God to come quickly, Lord Jesus. Even so, come quickly. Amen. Now, I'm going to ask Brother Aishi to do a prayer for us.
He's on a radio show.
Brother Aishi, could you do a prayer for us, please?
Yeah. Would you like an English prayer or would you like a Yoruba prayer?
Whichever one you would like to do, whatever's on your heart today.
Well, let's just do a short. Blessed is the man who walketh not in the counsel of the wicked, nor standeth in the ways of sinners, nor sitteth in the seal of scoffers, but his delight is in the law of the Lord. And on his law he meditates day and night. He is like a tree planted by the rivers of water that shall bring forth fruit in the season. and his leaf does not wither, and in all that he does, he prospers. But the wicked is not so, but are like the chaff that the wind driveth away. Therefore, the wicked should not stand in the judgment, nor sinners in the congregation of the righteous. For the Lord knows the way of the righteous, but the way of the wicked will perish. Selah.
Ashe, Ashe. Thank you so very much for that prayer, Mr. Aishi. Ladies and gentlemen, Mr. Aishi has been with us for quite a while. He come to us from Detroit, Michigan. He actually is also here by way of Zion. He has spoken on various different topics, and during our relationship session on our divorce clinic, he will be with us throughout the segment, throughout this month, and we are so grateful to have him. We just want to thank him once again for his lovely prayers and the support he gives us. Now, we want to throw the topic out there to the audience right now, and if you're out there, we're going to have our chat rooms open so you can come in and you can chat, and if you would like to be a guest in our chat room where you host our chat room, you're welcome to do so. Just drop me a line. Now, once again, our topic for this evening is what and how are our African-American families currently faring today in today's economic status? How are we making it? We've talked about the arranged relationships. Now we're talking about our current situation. How are we faring? Are we in need of a medicine, a healing balm? And are we troubled mentally by the state of the economic? And are there more young people who are gravitating towards habitual drugs? And are we experiencing an episode that we've never seen before? And how are we faring? And what do we need to do to stabilize ourselves, to turn the situations around? We know we have had oppression and we've had money situations in the past, back in the 40s, where people were looking at losing money in the stock market, where people's finances were not stable, and they're currently not stable now. So this is nothing new for us. But how are the African Americans faring, and what are we doing? I want to turn to our in-house residents, to Dr. Aishi today, or Priest Aishi, and ask them his opinion. Can you give us a word on that, Mr. Aishi?
Well, if you look at the situation in the African American community, it is dire when it comes to relationship. I think it's over 60% divorce rate. Probably higher than that, and it's going downhill right now. But you mentioned it earlier in your dissertation that economics and relationships go hand in hand. So just as the economics was destroyed in the community back right after the riots, so went the relationships. But we all know the problem is, we all have various reasons what the problem is, but I would like to try to concentrate on a solution, because we can go back to the forced, the welfare system forcing the man to leave the house so that the wife could receive payment. And this was one of the first steps that divided the family. It was forced by the state that a man could not be in your house if you're going to receive aid. So that led to economic downfall as well as a split in the family. So now you have 100 years after slavery, another forced split in the family. And then the propaganda is that black man is not around his family, and you've already forced him out of the house. Now you destroy the economics in the neighborhood. So now it's hard to maintain a proper relationship without the proper economics, because the man wants to be the breadwinner. So when the man is not the breadwinner, he feels inferior. And now you have another problem, and the woman starts to feel superior to the day to where, as you see, it is manifested into single-parent homes, because the woman is now the woman and the man. She feels she don't need a man because now she don't need him for the money. And whatever, guys, you know, she can get around that. So now we have a situation like never before in the planet Earth where you have women and men actually not being attracted to each other. For instance, we have a large population of our men that's in jails. So the man come home from jail, and here the woman is with her $60,000 a year job. She looks at the male, a man coming home from incarceration, as another baby coming in the house. He's taking care of another baby. Because she can't see past the scope of mind that she's in now with her socialization, with her job, is that success is, you know, quote unquote, having a car, two-car garage and a car and a big house, you know, image. But a man coming from jail, the woman just can't fathom that. And so now the women are in shape to take care of the situation if they would change their thinking. So instead of thinking of this is a problem because the man don't have a job, by the way, one of the brothers this seminar I was at, he had went to jail for 2 years for carrying a gun. But here in Detroit, everybody carry a gun. But now he's, you know, categorized as a criminal. He's carrying a gun, you know, to protect himself. So now he comes out and she looks at him as a criminal and don't want to put up with him because she's now got her PhD or her master's degree and she's don't want to feed another mouth like as a baby because he can't contribute because nobody will hire him because he has a felony on the record. So somewhere the women have to change their perspective of how they're looking at these men, our men, rather than being a burden because you have the job now. What about when the woman was the housewife and the man was doing all of the, you know, the work and the woman wasn't working, you know, she wasn't looked upon as, you know, something less than her, you know, less than a man. But now that the tables have turned and the women are the breadwinners, along with the incarceration tag, because you know, they make you think everybody in jail is a monster and they're supposed to be in jail, when in fact 75% of the people are innocent or get five times the amount of time they're supposed to have gotten because of the prison industry. So now our relationships suffer because we can't even address each other properly. So the women are going to have to change you know, paradigm shift. It's going to be a big shift in the way women.
And you're absolutely right, Brother Aishi, Priest Aishi. You're absolutely right. And I think what we need to be looking at is some type of initiation, number one, for our men who come back from prison to be initiated back into the community. And our women need to set this up because truly, we cannot abandon our men because we need them now more than ever before as a covering of our heads. And if we allow the system to dictate to us that our men are tainted, that they are coming back unfit to be a part of our families, then we're turning away the best asset we have. So if we could come together as a team and come up with something where if we're getting all these jobs and they're granting us a privilege to get jobs to go to the ceiling, go to that reach that glass ceiling. Now that we've made it to the top in the boardroom and we're, you know, walking down that carpet road to that six panel door and we are running things, we're vice president, then we've got to do something with it. We have a responsibility, I think, to then create opportunities whereas our men have shared with us and giving us the lucrative income. So now it's our turn to take our pension and cover our men with them.
As you said, you've run every company in the world proficiently. So you're able to do this, but now the socialization that comes along with this means that you have to either abandon or leave your man. Or there's no, as the famous quote, there's no man on my level of the amount of money that I make, you know. That's foolishness, you know.
I think that the women have to get it right. You know, you become foolish when you say this black man is not on your level when you have been created for the black man. Your very womb has been designed with the depth for the black man, not for the Caucasian, not for the yellow man, not for the Native American man, but for the black man. You can't even be set aside by any other race of people other than your black man. Little do you know that, but it has been confirmed by many doctors, like Dr. Loyola Africa puts it very plainly. That black man was created for you. And the satisfaction you get from him, you can get from no other man. We've got it twisted as black women, and we've got to look at the fact that if we've got pensions and if we've got social securities, we've got to set up a way to get into the prisons to let them know that we have a togetherness, a union, and we're going to bargain with you that if you've lost your ability to pay into Social Security, we're now going to allow you to share ours because we owe it to you. We owe it to our black men. And if the preachers were smart, they would take these women back to the prisons to help them reunite with these men. And if they got income coming in and they're due to have a Social Security check and a pension, this business needs to be handled immediately, ASAP. And I'm saying this for the listening audience because I know some of you women out there are making top dollar, $100,000, and you don't know what to do with it. So you are bleeding yourself blind, buying everything you think you can buy, but you're not building a community, you're not building a society so that our families will be protected. We're talking about doing something that we normally wouldn't do, but because of the state of our family, we need to save our black men. Our black men are dying, the extinct vehicle, just like the bald eagle. The bald eagle came off the list. Now the black man is the current thing that's on the list. And if we realize what's happening, this is by design. The Colonel Report talked about all this being by design. When you wage that the system has gone in and scattered your people, caused your people to be killed off and displaced your people, that is a genocide. You can bring war. And you could actually bring a case against the judge and the courts about genocide because a person has been displaced in society, and that is by design. So when we get these funds that we have, if we can't buy our black man out of prison and use our funds to get good lawyers for them, then we have to set up a precedence where we're giving them an opportunity to have benefits when they come out. Now, and women, if you are hearing me right now, please call in because I want you to call in because what in the hell are you going to do with a paycheck and no man by your side? You can't possibly be content and you can't possibly be fulfilled or whole. And don't tell me that you don't have to have a black man. Every black woman needs a black man. Go ahead.
If I may butt in here.
Go ahead.
It's One of the problems that was looked upon mainly was the education, and not so much the lack of education, but the miseducation. It's like we have so many, I'll use the example of doctors who do things a certain way, but there's a way that's an alternative. And so now when we look at the way that we're doing things, We're taking the first solution. We're not absolutely taking the best solution. So we have to really sit down as a community and look at ways that this can work and offer more solutions than just the one solution, the first thing that pops up. So your plan is a very good plan, and it needs to be expounded on, but something has to be done because we are on the point of extinction. And it's to the point now to where the children are not having any grandmothers because the mothers are dying so young. People that were dying at 50 and 60 are now dying at 30 and 40.
Now, you spoke of the education, and I want to expound upon that because I am an educator. I feel that even though I hold 3 degrees, I have been miseducated, and the educated that I paid all the money for, I felt that I could have possibly got that through life experiences, through the hard knocks of life, which a lot of men have obtained. And if you're well-read and if you do learn to read, you can pretty much master just about anything and not have to accept the education because a miseducation is worse than any education at all. So I beg the difference with this so-called education that women have gotten that makes them so much more affluent than the African-American man who is in prison. I believe that if we ever come together and we realize that the literacy is all we need, that's why this room is called Care to Read, because if you become affluent in reading, you can figure things out for yourself. You don't need anyone to destroy information.
If I might run that again. Yes, you're absolutely right about being able to read on your own. I just reading a book here by Dr. Clark, and Dr. Clark actually taught himself how to all of the knowledge that Dr. Clark had. You would think that he went to Oxford and Harvard and a few other places too to go to school, but Dr. Clark taught himself to read by going to the library every day and actually meeting the guy who runs the museum, in the big, what is it, in New York, Strasbourg Museum, what is it called? You know, the Strasbourg Museum. And actually wound up meeting him and studying with him in storefronts and other places. And this is where he got his education, which now gave him a well-rounded education. You know, as one of our favorite poets put it, how can we sit in the same classroom with a white child and a black child and come out with two completely different educations from the same information? Because of
one of the things that's happening right now, if everyone is astute to the fact the Common Core is coming out, where they realize they've been giving an inferior education to the lower socioeconomic children and giving a superior education to our immigrants who are sitting in classrooms that are reserved for them, that are reserved for their culture, and giving them four-hour blocks of language and English, whereas those people are getting inundated with the foundation of our great literacy and our ability to learn the culture. And those two things can help you make it. However, they're not faring very well because the institution requires that they have social studies, math, and science. And because they can't pass those disciplines, they can't give them a certificate of completion. So once again, things have backfired on them. So now with this Common Core, black teachers need to step up and say, listen, you've given our black children an inferior education by putting them in special ed classes, which dumbs down the curriculum and prevents them from reading the great literature, and they have the same set of curriculum year after year and stay in the same block classes, so they're blocked from learning, and yet we say we're giving them an education. They're a liar. They're not giving them an education. They're denying them the opportunity to have great works of art in front of them. And yet we are proud to be teachers and work in the special ed department. I say it's shameful. I say it's a disgrace for them to continue on with this madness. That is why I'm so glad Common Core came along. Now that policy, to leave no child behind, must be reinforced. And they're putting the enforcers out there in the field to help enforce that every child will be given an equal education. If not, there are some penalties to be had, and we as teachers have got to reinforce those penalties because every child must be given those opportunities, and we must not call them high-level deficient children. We must not call them differentiated children or slow or at risk. We have got to take the church monkeys and the Rodney King names off, because that prevents you from educating a child when you predestine what that child can do. And all of our black children who are put in special ed are predestined for failure. They're building prisons for them and calculating how many prisons they will need because they anticipate that they won't make it out of high school. And that is a disservice. Parents can look at that and they can bring suit against the school for failure for teaching their children. Now, I do know that black boys in particular are the ones that are having the problem. So if they're ending up in prison institutes, where will they get the opportunity to learn to read? Women, the first thing you do when you meet a man, if he cannot read or needs remediation, offer him the opportunity to learn to read. And if we get our black brothers reading, that will keep a large percentage of them out of prison. That is why this room is heavily focused in on reading. Now, in this room, you can come at any time. If you speak out and say, I need to be remediated, I need help, I need legal help, we have ways of getting you that help, because it is our responsibility to support our black brothers because they are our keepers. Now, I'm going to go to you, our expert, Mr. Aishi. What can we do for the brothers in the prison? How can we help them as black women? What is it that they need from us as black women?
Well, correspondence is a good thing right away. You know, start writing letters and talking, and even see your family members that's in jail. You know, everybody's got family members in jail. Reach out to them. You know, reach out to people who and that would be one of the first things. And then start looking at them differently. You know, as what really happened. You know, you have to realize what's happening here. And, you know, everybody's not a criminal because you go to jail. You know, it's just, you know, it's that thing driving while black. It's not to, to harp on it. That's really a serious thing, and it transforms all walks of life. So men are in jail unproportionately for this reason. So don't look at men. All men, and they're, as they was guilty as charged. Now, I'm not saying that some of them don't need to go to jail. I'm not saying that either. Of course they are. But it's not all of them. And so if we start looking at this as a partnership rather than as a competition or trying to live the quote-unquote Ozzie and Harriet type of life and look at getting something for our children, looking at building an institution, a family unit, before we leave this earth alone. And we are going to die alone, but the journey along the way is supposed to be one of joy. So there's men that just look at it in a different light. And, just because a person doesn't have the same economic problems that you had don't mean that they're less a person than you. You know, I've seen in one country I was in, where the guy running for president was a genius, but he didn't speak English. So they didn't elect him. They elect the guy who spoke good English, who couldn't even do a math problem. So we look at these, aesthetics and judge people like, oh, what kind of car are you driving? You know, he must be a great person here. Must be, see, I've never met a rich person smarter, just more knowledgeable than myself. So the knowledge, and money, we get it confused. It's like everything is based on materialism. So look at it for what it is. Here's a man and here's a woman, and something has come between you and God and separated you. And you have to be the one to bring it back, because you're in the position to bring it back. The men aren't in any position, other than, like one lady said, well, I wouldn't mind as long as the man was doing housework and I'd go to work, don't have to hire no babysitter, no house cleaner, fine with me. But she says, and the brothers, that's on you now. Are you going to do that? So you get on your feet. Then you contribute in that way. So now there's a family started right there, because now you fulfill both each other's needs. You don't need a babysitter. You don't need probably even a driver now, So now the brother can work his way back, and like one brother came through, now he owns two businesses. They charged him with a felony for carrying a gun. He filled out the application, and they hired him anyway. And so he went on to finish that job. Now he's on two businesses. And, so it's...
Aishi, I had a question. I know that in the state of Indiana, they came out with expungements and in an effort to try to alleviate those black brothers from having the record explicitly shown to potential employees, where it would be limited only to the court system and the police department, but those who would be employers would not be able to see that record because it would be expunged if it has been over. They reduced it down to, I think, 10 years. It used to be 15. That is a great, great thing that happened to the state of Indiana, and I've been working on that project to helping black brothers to write the state to appeal to them for an expungement. Now, the other thing I said, until we can get that program working like it should, we should try to get our cases taken to the world courts so that the world court can be able to adjudicate over the cases for the black men and see what is happening to our judiciary system and how unfair it is. And the world courts will view things from a different perspective. A lot of cases
once
should
you get
not
out of court
even
here,
be heard. Shouldn't be heard in this district because they're not looking at humanism, and the world courts will look at the humanism of a case. And here it's not based on that. They don't care if they've got case law and black law. They're viewing these people differently because they have got the sealed prison cells. And this is the new cheap labor of getting them to go in and to become slaves again. Whereas in the world courts, they will view cases differently. And if we have the money, we should try to get our cases allocated to the world courts so they can hear our plea. There are far too many black men that are being incarcerated over a lot of nonsense. And police brutality is at an all-time high. And no one's looking at the fact that back in the 60s, before civil rights movement, there was no need to have a security system governing the Africans because we had enough black laws put on us that kept us in place, that there need to be no surveillance of policemen in black communities. You didn't see as many blacks going to jail. It was more Caucasian men in the 60s going to jail. And the statistics will back me up on it. You can go pull the statistics, anyone that want to, and see that in the early 60s, there were no large sums of black men going to prison, but large sums of Caucasians. It was only after the civil rights laws were passed that they had to do heavy surveilling. And usually the policemen were obtained to secure property and to guard property. It wasn't about these little idiosyncrasies, inhumane acts. And if you look at the pledge that the policeman has to take, his pledge is to govern himself to protect citizens, to protect citizens. You can read him his rights back and show him what the law has in detail him to do. And I will show you every time that he's in violation and in noncompliance. And if we go back to Huey Newton and what that gang was saying about let's look at laws and see how they're applicable to us. We've got to learn the laws, and most of all, we've got to implement street law so that our young people will begin to start evasively quoting the law, stating the law, going in the courtrooms, knowing the law. Part of our problem is we're pleading ignorance to cases where they will go in and everything is a plea bargain. You don't get to go to trial anymore. You're plea bargaining on cases that you're not even guilty on. That is a farce. And every time it will create an accumulative record for you. And some people have been put in jail for a lifetime if they've had petty crime that's repeatedly. So we've got to look at this crime situation and got to get a hold of it because you got judges and you got lawyers that are just basing everything on the DA giving you a plea bargain. It's a game, and they're playing with our lives, and they're playing with our men's lives, and we've got to do something about it more serious than what we've been doing. And once we move the cases into the world court, I think we will fare better and have a better chance of having an adjudicator come in and properly adjudicate the cases. But we cannot go any further with this madness that we are seeing. And black women, take your noses out of the air. Your money will soon be no good. There will not be enough gold to back it up. And when you flaunt your money, you better have a carrot or you better have some gold to back it up because truly these dollars that they're putting every day, there's no gold to back it up or silver. So we're in a worse way than we ever have been because sleepless nights are sleepless nights without a man in your bed. And don't tell me you're converting over to a woman bedding you in a bed. There's too many black women that are resorting to other women bedding them down. You can hold yourself down with a man. And if he is in prison, so what? You clean him up, you give him an opportunity to be legitimate, and women can make their men legit. But part of the problem is us. And I've written a book on the effects that females have on black males in the school system. Most of our black children that are black males that go into special ed, they have to be written there with a script, with a diagnosis, and with a recommendation from 80% of teachers who are females. And those females are the ones who are placing those black boys into special ed classrooms because there are no men teaching in the school, so it has to be us. And Dr. Jawaza Kunjufu talked about the conspiracy to destroy black male. Who are the conspirators, and who are the two that work together? I say it's the female and it's the man who are working together to collaboratively put these boys in special ed. Let's start with special ed. Let's debrief special ed. Let's debunk it. Let's get rid of it. Let's stop it, because they're getting extra dollars to put these boys away in institutions called special ed. And that's the beginning of the problem. We can take that problem and we can annihilate it overnight if enough teachers see that it's a problem. I know it's a problem because they ran me down trying to get me to let my son be examined. I refused to. I let them take me to court to prevent them from having full-blown rights to examine my child, to put him in some special ed class after coming out of a private school. And I prevail. And some of you are fighting the same problem now with your black boys being put in special ed, and you've signed off on these documents. Guess what? You can revoke your signature. You can take it back, parents, and you can take your children out of special ed. It is a direct route into the penal institution. I promise you, if you don't take your black males out of special ed, you can lose parental right. And then the court will own custody of your children, and you will lose parental right, and that child becomes a ward of the state. All of this is relevant that I'm saying. Our black men are headed down a path. And if you have males that have been affected by police brutality, stand up and fight. And if they've done something wrong and they're lying, go to court and call the ancestors on them and let the ancestors adjudicate the case, because they've got to stop this police brutality and beating our black men down and then trying to put a rap on them that they have physically abused them. That's another thing we have got to stand up against. There's never been more policemen assaulting young black men and putting